Welcome to Fundamentally Human, a podcast about mental health topics unpacked in an easy-to-understand way. My name is Shervin, and I'm your host. Let's get started. It is so hard to be a kid nowadays, and I think a lot of it has to do with there's so many more external pressures, there's a lot more social media use, social standards, and the cost of living is so high now. I remember when I was a kid, I had to use dial-up to access the internet. I had a physical phone book with all my friends' phone numbers, and I had to actually call them and not text them. Shout out to those who used to use T9 to text and how long that took in order to send a message to your friend, and how each text message was like 25 cents. So I didn't have a smartphone or data, things like Instagram, Snapchat, or whatever social media platforms there are now until I started university. But nowadays, kids are absorbing so much information at a young age. I see many of them with smartphones and iPads, and who knows what they're looking at, even when they before they start school, even preschool. I've seen that at restaurants. But on the flip side, I can also imagine how difficult it is to be a parent, especially over the course of the pandemic and having to navigate and juggle through all the different hurdles. So today, to learn about the experiences of being a parent in 2022, I've asked Kenold to join me here, who will be sharing his experiences as a new dad. Welcome, Kenold.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today, Kenold. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Absolutely. So I'm a financial literacy educator, wealth coach, financial planner. I have over 9 years of experience in the retail banking and wealth management firms with a proven dedication to exceptional client service. And of course, I'm a young dad.
How old are you, Kenold?
I am 31 this year.
Just had to expose you a little bit there. But so you're 31. Tell us more about what it means to be a new dad. How old is your child?
Yeah, my child, he's 2.5. He's turning 3 this year. It's great to be a dad. I wouldn't be saying this in the beginning of the journey, but right now it's my son's kind of my inspiration. I've just recently started a new business as well, and I get a lot of tips from him. He doesn't realize it, but looking at a child, they're the best teachers in the world, I think.
What do you mean by that? What did you learn maybe at the start of your journey with your child? And then recently, just starting your business, what have you learned from him?
Yeah, a lot of things. I think, seeing through the child's eyes, they do three things, right? They eat, they sleep, and they play. And a lot of times, I think as human beings, as we get older, we forget about, we eat, but we forget about the play and the rest part. And recently, actually, because of those three things, I've started to take better care of my health. I'm like, hey, he's playing a lot. I'm going to go play too. I'm going to go and exercise and, go and do different things. And he eats healthy, right? I make his lunches now for daycare and all that. It allows me to be more conscious of the stuff I'm eating and making sure it's healthy for myself. That's really what I mean by kind of being a that he's a teacher. Kind of as a kid, they're brand new. They have they're a blank sheet of paper. So it's almost as pure as you can get as a human being. And if you can just kind of listen to your child and kind of just watch, you actually learn a lot of things from them.
I really like how you emphasize the importance of play. I recently read this book from Brené Brown, and she does a lot of work in resilience. And one of the things she noticed was the importance of play and incorporating that into her lifestyles. I think right now there's a lot of that hustle culture where, you got to work longer than the 9-to-5. Think about passive income, another business, another side hustle. How can you make more money? How can you keep growing and learning? And if you decide to relax or have fun and play, that means you're not working hard enough. And I think that puts a lot of pressure on people. And sometimes that's definitely affected me. So being able to incorporate play is really, really important. And actually, I've been working in the community for, this is my other job, so speaking of side hustles, but I've been working in the community for about 10 years now, and I've noticed that there has been a decrease of children attending programs or camps and whatnot in the last few years, because now they play more video games or they just stay at home and they're on their computers or on their phones and not so much engaged with going to summer camps, because it doesn't look as cool anymore as it did when I was a kid about 10, 20 years ago, where we always looked forward to things like summer camps or day camps or after school programs. I'm wondering, how do you incorporate play into your life other than exercise? I don't know if everyone will call that play, Kennel, but how do you incorporate play and how does that work with your child?
Great question. Well, exercise, I think, could be a play if, just like, for example, this morning, I went on a jog. And just like my trainer, I have a personal trainer now. I was at about 178 pounds. And I grew because of, I guess, COVID. And taking care of a child, I grew to about 206 pounds. And so my personal trainer put it best. He's like, we're not training for the Olympics here, Kennel. I just want you to make it easy for yourself so that you will actually enjoy it and you can do more of it. And so just run because you want to run, not because you want to hit some kind of personal best, not because you have to hit a goal. And so this morning I just ran like by the river and ran 4 kilometers because I wasn't trying, this is, again, I just started recently exercise, right? So I just picked myself up. It was a nice day. I just, got some shoes and just ran. And it was not to, he's like, just try to run for 30 minutes. Right. So I just tried. And I think that's the thing with play, right? Like with kids, there's no goal, right? They don't have a end goal in mind. They just play. So like in the mornings, like, Cohen and I would have a dance party. Like he would just be like, music. Right. And then like, we'll just turn on Spotify. And then he loves his party dance free song, and then he'll say like freeze, and he'll like dance, and then those things, and then he's such an inclusive person. He'll just include me, right? Like if I'm sitting on my phone, right, texting away, he'll be like Baba, and I'll be like, okay, yes, right, focus, right, live in the moment, right? Because kids, that's what they do. They live in the moment. They don't think about tomorrow, don't think about yesterday. They are in the moment. So you talk about mindfulness, you talk about kind of being in the present, like, again, like young kids, right? Like preschool, I guess he's called, like they, and infants too, like they are so in the moment. And so I put my phone away and I just kind of like, right, I got to be in the moment with him. And that's what play is. It's just having fun. And it's like, it's not, I think that's why exercise, you mentioned, I was like, not a lot of people think exercise is fun, is because a lot of people, like, they have these goals in mind, they need to accomplish something, right? We're in this society, like you mentioned, it's all about accomplishments, it's all about getting things done. We forget about just doing it for the sake of doing it. Like, when's the last time that you did something that you enjoy because you just enjoy it, not to make some kind of productivity, some kind of KPI, right, key performance indicator? Just do it because you love to do it. And that's what kids do. And again, to the point of kids being the greatest teachers, I would dread running. But then now, with that mindset of, I'm just going to run for as long as I can and just enjoy myself. Like, it's not work. It's just having fun. And other things in terms of play, just going out for walks with him. And then they'll just like hop on, they'll go on a playground and, he'll do pretend play. So he'll, pick up food and stuff like that and eat and all that. And then it's just like in this imaginary world, right? And so they just have this full of imagination. And at the end of the day, it's just having fun. It's just, playing.
I really like that, especially what you said about doing things, like don't do things for the sake of doing it. Do it because you want to, and not having to accomplish something every time you do something. I mean, on one hand, of course, that's a really great way to motivate and activate yourself to do something productive. But on the other hand, it can also be very exhausting to have a complete meaning or something you have to accomplish every time. And I actually struggle with that a lot with running, because sometimes I'm like, well, I just kind of want to jog today. But then I track my running on an app. So when I look back and if I don't run as fast, then I'm like, oh my God, I didn't really run today. So that's something to remind myself too, to do things regardless of the speed necessarily, but you know, one step or just even running for a little bit is running, and it's essentially better than just for me to sit at home all day too. So that's a really great reminder. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I know that for you, culturally, your parents, can you remind me, are they immigrants to Canada, or how did that look like for you growing up?
Yeah, so they're immigrants. They're from Hong Kong, and they actually moved here because they thought they can have a better future in Canada, like most immigrant parents. So they uprooted themselves, and you know, they didn't even speak like English, right? But they knew, okay, Canada is probably a better opportunity for my kids to grow up. It's a better environment, and so they uprooted themselves and moved here. And then they moved here, I think, 1987. So 3 years later, they had me. So I'm dating myself, but yeah. So growing up, yeah, immigrant, right? Immigrant family. So it's all about the hustle, all about like, we got to save, you know, don't spend, you know, if you don't need it. It was all about cutting costs, right? So, you know, a fond memory would be, you know, wanting to go to Disneyland. And then my parents would be like, okay, let's make a road trip out of it. And then they drive with a couple family friends, you know, down to the States, went to, you know, Portland, Seattle, all those places. We made it to San Francisco, but, you know, as kids, I think seven, 8 year old complained, right? We're like, when are we going to get to Disneyland? And this is like day seven, day eight. And so parents couldn't take it anymore and drove back up. And I never got to Disneyland. And the reason was, you know, we need to save money. We need to, you know, we don't have money to fly down. You know, they didn't have a proper financial plan. I mean, I'm a financial planner now. So looking back, I'm like, well, had they kind of costed out everything, I think we could have just, they could have not spent the 7 days on the road. They could have just flew there and spent 7 days at Disneyland. But I mean, they didn't know any better, right? They knew they had to save money. They have to work hard. And, you know, they try to be the best parents that they can. But, so growing up, you know, I had this really bad relationship with money, right? Like I didn't know how to spend. Like I just know how to save, which is a good problem to have, I guess. But I mean, during COVID, like I had savings, but I wouldn't use it. Like I was just in this saving mentality until my pastor became my planner. And he's like, you know, we're in an emergency situation right now, Kenold. It's okay to use your savings. And that's when I'm kind of like, oh, right, this is an emergency, right? Like, okay, so how do I use money? And so I would never use money to enjoy myself, because it's always like, no, that's enjoyment. You know, if you use money to enjoy, that's a bad thing, right? And you kind of grow up with those kind of programs. And, you know, I'm in the process of reprogram myself to be like, no, we can, if we earn money, we can go and enjoy it and have a more healthier relationship with money.
I deeply resonate with that, especially relationship with money. I remember growing up, it was really about saving. And honestly, now I recognize it was for survival purposes, about our parents wanting us to have better futures and setting us up for that. But that also meant that we had a gap in being able to, like you said, use money to enjoy ourselves, of course, within our means. And now it's, we hear a lot of people saying, oh, you know, just treat yourself. And I think that's helpful to remind ourselves, but also not doing everything or spending everything as though it was a treat. Otherwise, the purpose and meaning of something being a treat is going to be gone. Yeah, it's something I definitely struggled with. Do you know any other, or have you noticed any similarities or differences that you've seen when you're raising your son versus how you were raised, especially now you're in a more Western environment and you're not an immigrant, you were born here?
Yeah, so I think the similarity in terms of parenting style is, and I think you can talk to most parents, and I think it's coming out of love. So both my parents, how they parent me and how I parent my son is out of love. But I think there's two different types of love, right? There's the conditional love and there's the unconditional love. And that's where the differences lie. So with the conditional love, it was the bamboo stick, right? So like physically, I got beat, right, growing up. And it was kind of how my parents were raised, right? It was like, oh, you're, you know, you didn't do good and you know, you didn't listen to me. So, you know, smack you kind of thing, right? And that didn't stop until I think my mom listened to a radio program saying that, social services will be called on her and kids will be taken away. And so my brother got better because, me and my brother have a 6-year gap. And so there was no bamboo stick kind of used on him. But me growing up in the 90s, right, this is normal, right? The belt strap and all that other sort of stuff.
Big chopstick here.
Big chopstick, yeah. The wooden spoon wasn't.
Oh, God. Super painful. Definitely part of the 90s. You're not wrong about that.
And so it was very transactional. It was very disciplined. And, you know, it was all about focused on what we shouldn't do, right? There's a lot of threats, right? Like, oh, if you do this, go to your room. If you do that, so it was a lot of, like, there was no safety, right? Everything was a threat. Everything was about do. And no wonder we get raised up to be machines, right? To be human doings instead of human beings. And I think that's where difference lies, right? Is that I started with that and it didn't work. With Cohen, I had high expectations for him. I wanted him to walk before, let's say the milestone was 4 months. Well, 3 months I wanted him to walk, right? And I'm like, son, why are you not walking yet? And I set all these unrealistic expectations because, again, that's how I was parented. So you kind of do what, you learned because you don't know any better, right? Mm-hmm. But now, if you ask kind of what's differently, I parent more from unconditional love. And so it's very child-driven. I ask myself how I can support him. How do I encourage him? How do I let him know that if he makes mistakes that it's okay? And we just have to figure out what we have to do after. I used to yell at him, right? Oh, you're not good enough. You didn't do this. And I'm like, I stopped myself and I'm like, wait, I'm just repeating what my parents were doing. And I said, I'm not going to do it. So it took a very conscious effort to be like, okay, I have to do, like my psychologist would tell me, Kennel, like, you know what your parents did to you and it didn't work. Well, the definition of insanity is to do the same thing again and expect different results. So her quote to me is, do the opposite. So I'm like, all right, let's do the opposite. So instead of yelling at my son, it'll be like, okay, how do I love my son, right? It's like, so when he cries, instead of saying like, oh, stop crying, like my parents would tell me, I'll come alongside him and say like, okay, Cohen, acknowledge his feelings, right? It's okay. Like, it's okay to be upset. It's okay to be sad. Baba loves you. Baba's going to be here no matter what. Like, you are loved no matter what. And it's okay to be sad. And he'll cry, he'll wail. But I just stand by him and say, hey, it's okay. It's completely okay. Like, what you're experiencing right now, it's normal. It's supposed to happen. And I guess growing up, I didn't get that, right? Growing up, it was like, stop crying. Like, shut up. Like, no, stop crying. Like, you can't stop because they didn't know how to deal with it. You know, and as a result, it was not safe to express sadness. It was not safe to be angry. It was not safe to be upset. So you bury them. You bury emotions. And what I'm trying to do is encourage the emotions, help them label the emotions. And as babies, the only time that the only way they can communicate if they don't have words is to cry. If something's wrong, they cry. So that's their only form of communication. So instead of yelling at them, you listen to them. Like, what is wrong? Is it a baby, like a diaper change? Is it because you're hungry? Are you hurting? Is it like, what is it? Right. Like, and it's like a puzzle. Right. And I know it can be very frustrating for parents because it's like, just talk to me, right? Kid, just talk to me. And they can't. And then they get more upset because it's like, I'm trying, but I just need you to listen. Right. And so you got this cycle going and it's tough.
I really admire your work in being patient with Cohen, especially with identifying feelings. We do that a lot in therapy and with my clients. I even have a feelings wheel that I show them. And some of them even print it out and put it in their bedroom or in their agenda. And it's really about, instead of identifying everything as you're happy, sad, angry, stressed, overwhelmed, anxious, you really dig deep and look at what's going on. Are you anxious, but what does that mean? Are you maybe overwhelmed and stressed are some buzzwords that are typically used because of an assignment. And okay, let's dig deeper. What exactly is going on? Is it because you're having a difficult time getting started with the assignment? Is it because you don't understand what's going on with the assignment? And I think by doing that work to explore deeper, no matter how old you are or who you're with, I think it can really uncover a lot of different elements to the situation. And then we, as the other person trying to console whoever is in a difficult moment, we can truly have better tools to either empathize or just be there for that person. And I like that you're normalizing emotions and being vulnerable, which I think takes a lot of strength, no matter how old you are, rather than saying, oh, if you're sad or you're upset, that's not allowed. That's not normal. You have to be happy. That's the standard. And that's not true at all. That if someone was happy all the time, they're not building resilience. They're not learning how to stand up from a situation either. And there was another book I was reading about how to not raise an asshole kid. And one chapter was, it was a good book. One chapter was about, you know, not building an ego, and how the author, she talked about it was that instead of telling a kid like, oh, you know, good job, you got 100, a very results-oriented feedback, it's more about their effort. So it's a, I saw that you put a lot of time and effort into studying. I noticed you did a lot of practice exams to prepare for the exam. So by saying that, you're not really focusing on what the result was, but what the effort was put in. And from there, you can truly uncover, well, if they put in a lot of effort and didn't do well, maybe there was something that they can adjust in their studying. Or if they put in a lot of effort and that's what led to good results, then there's a correlation there. Or on the contrary side, if they didn't put any effort and didn't do well, then that's for them to recognize that effort plays a role in what results you get. Of course, I know there are things like luck or how smart someone might be naturally, blah, blah, blah. But when it really boils down to it, we're looking at the effort, the thoughts and feelings that are put behind something rather than solely on the results. And I think that's really aligned with what you're saying about that conditional and unconditional love. With conditional, I remember as a child, is always about, you know, how many more A's did I get compared to this other person, or being able to finish my piano levels as fast as I can, and then my parents were able to brag about it with the other kids. A lot of it was conditional. In order for me to be praised by my parents, which is not often, you know, as an Asian child, I had to show results. And if I didn't show results, then I'm probably going to get smacked. I'm probably going to get yelled at or berated. And unfortunately, that's just how they grew up too, to have results in order to survive. But I'm really glad to hear that you're really normalizing mental health with Cohen, and that it's really hard to do. So kudos to you for doing that, Kenold.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. So it's not like overnight I became it. It was a struggle. I mean, I'm only realizing kind of doing these things now I can share, right? Like he's 2.5. So I've already done some damage in his early years, right? And but at least I prevent kind of moving forward. He kind of, you know, as I heal, you know, from my mental health and my struggles, then, you know, hopefully for his life and his future generations, you know, he doesn't have that anymore, right? So
thanks for being open about that. I'm wondering if you're comfortable about sharing what were some of the struggles in the first year compared to maybe some of the struggles now that Cohen's 2 and turning 3.
Yeah. So everything was a struggle as a new
fair
parent.
Enough.
The physical, right? The sleep deprivation. You know, I heard from a friend, you know, their babies were sleeping from 10 till 6. Rare, right? Like mine, I think Cohen woke up at 2, at 5, at 8. So every 3 hours, I mean, he had to wake up to eat, right? And so I think for the first, 2 to 3 months, it was just whirlwind. You know, I know a lot of, but it's very typical for a kind of, you know, the spouse, right? The woman, the wife to deal with everything. But I wanted to be a good husband. I wanted to support. So, I try to feed, when I can, and kind of, help Haley out. So, maybe some dads might not have this struggle because, they have a wife that kind of does everything. But I challenge the fathers to ask your spouse to see how you can support them, because it's a very, very difficult journey that they're on. And even just my wife would tell me, yeah, even if you just feed them for the night, like, she breastfed, so she would have to pump, and then I would have to defrost the milk and feed. Even that small gesture, or getting water, like small little things, right? Like, it meant a lot to her. And she vocalized. So for the females, please vocalize to your husbands what is needed. We don't know. We can't read minds. And for the husbands, right? For the fathers, ask your spouse. I know everyone wants to be a good dad, be a good husband. That's why you're in marriage, right? You love the other person. So do that. Just like another struggle will be how to keep them alive, especially if it's your first one. Like, it's brand new to you, so you worry about doing everything wrong, right? From feeding to napping to changing a diaper. Like, you're just like, is he or she gonna be alive? Like, am I doing this right? Like, I've never done this before. And yeah, I've went to a prenatal course, and I've watched YouTube videos, I read many books, but until it's live, you don't know. And I think another one is not feeling good enough as a father. Like, I just felt like, okay, I'm not giving him enough. Like, I'm not doing enough. I'm just not enough. And so, you have these kind of mental blockages in your mind saying, like, you're not good enough. Like, it's just like this self-defeating behavior. So you're trying your best, and you grow up just thinking you're not good enough because you're trying to perform. And then now you have this, like, real big challenge, and you just, like, so you're fighting the sleep deprivation, you're trying to figure out how to do everything, and then you've got this, like, internal, not you, I got this internal struggle with, like, am I good enough? And finally, as a result, then I lashed out at my son when he cries, because it's not because he's crying. He's trying to tell me something, right? But again, in the early beginnings, I didn't know that. I thought he was telling me I wasn't good enough, and that's why he's crying. So his cry triggered me, triggered the thought of I'm not good enough. And so I will lash out, because that's the defensive mechanism to do. It's like, oh, you're telling me I'm not good enough, so okay, well, I'm gonna yell at you, and I'm gonna scream at you, I'm gonna tell you're not good enough, right? It's just, you get defensive. But again, now kind of, more healthy and more emotionally aware, it's like, oh, well, he was just trying to tell me something was wrong. Like, it was neutral. Like, he wasn't he didn't he had no intention to tell me I'm a bad father. That was all me, right? That was all internal. That was all my programs playing. But he was just trying to tell me he needed a diaper change, or he couldn't eat, or he's trying to pick up a fork and he was frustrated. But a lot of times, as a new parent, you carry that burden, right? You carry that thinking that it's all you're wrong. Like, you're again, like, everyone different backgrounds and stuff like that. But I, had a very kind of, again, a not good enough, a very shaming program, if I may use, for lack of a better word. And so I just shame myself. And so, those are the struggles in the early on. And currently, it's more, now he can communicate a little bit more. So it's kind of like, okay, it's easier, because he can actually use little words like, stop, or like, like, I want iPad, kind of thing, right? Two or three word sentences. So really, it's now setting boundaries with the iPad. And I think balancing work with family. I think, how do I invest, find more time to invest in my son, to be there for the important moments, right? It's one thing to say I want to be there for soccer games and all these, and basketball games, and be there for them. And it's another thing to actually do it. And as I'm building a business, that other business I'm doing, I joke with my wife, I'm like, it's like having a second child, because it's like, it's in an infancy again, right? Like, you're trying to start everything, you're doing everything, so it's like sucking up your time. And I have to set very clear boundaries with myself that, okay, Saturday and Sundays are family days, right? And no work, and unless, of course, like, it's a $1 million client or something like that, then my wife was like, yeah, then go close that deal and make $1 million. But unless it's like $1 million, right? It's like, no, we want you here. And that's the constant struggle, right? Because I always want to do more. I always, like, it's fun kind of starting a business, and it demands my time. I want to generate more income for my family so that I can provide for them. Because that's just what, parents do. But at the same time, my son Cohen doesn't know that, right? He'll just call for Baba, right? Like he'll come back from daycare and be like, Baba, Baba, and I'm in the meeting. And it's like, oh, my heart's tugged, right? It's like, okay, like this is the perfect time to connect with him, right? To let him know that he's important and all that, right? And it's like, how do I juggle that with like a client meeting, or something like that? And those are my current struggles, kind of like, okay, I want him to know he is important because he is. But also, how do I balance that with my work priorities and all that other stuff?
Thanks for being honest about all that. I know, like you said, all of us, if we're getting married, let's say, or we're becoming a parent, we don't go in with the intention of, right, I'm gonna be the worst husband ever. I'm gonna be the worst dad ever. And if you have those thoughts, then yikes. That's all I'm gonna say there. But, jokes aside, we go in with intentions of being there for a child or being there for our partners. And I want to take this moment just to draw some parallels because not everyone, not all listeners are married or have partners or have children. But think of it in terms of expectations. When we have expectations for someone else or for ourselves that we haven't really thought through or they're unspoken of, then it's going to create a lot of pressure internally and externally. If you didn't tell Haley or ask Haley what she needs and she expected it, then I imagine there would be a lot of conflict. Or if Haley didn't ask you what her needs were and didn't ask you what your needs were, and both of you just kept it in and expected each other to do it, then again, that's going to cause some conflict because there's going to be disappointment when it's not being done. And then on the other hand, you talk about if your baby is crying when Cohen's crying and to really figure out, well, what's going on here? Instead of just saying, oh, are you crying because of me and taking it so personally at that time? I think that's when things like you talk about shame and guilt will surface. And with shame and guilt also comes things like anger or feeling resentment. And by not normalizing that, crying can be okay and to really communicate and ask what's going on to work on it together instead of just taking it on so in your head, I think that can definitely cause a lot of conflict again. So I'm really hearing that it's been helpful for you to communicate with everyone, not just yourself, but with Haley, with Cohen, and those around you. What are we expecting of each other? What can we help each other with? What's going on here? And being able to set those healthy boundaries, I think that really diminishes, again, I need a new word, but the conflict that comes up for you guys. And now it's just really, I'm hearing the struggles are maybe more of a balance and figuring out how to juggle with all the different things. And I guess there's no perfect way to juggle our schedules, but one of the ways to really diminish some of the struggles is to communicate with each other and to help each other out rather than one, shouldering all the burden on yourself, and two, just lashing out at everyone because that's not a healthy way to cope with it at all.
That's right.
Yeah. And I know the last couple of years have been extremely difficult to a lot of parents. Is your son old enough to understand COVID, or how has that been for you guys the last couple of years?
Yeah, so my son doesn't really understand COVID, but I would say it does definitely have an impact on him because like there I would see now, right? There's a lot of play dates and all that sort of stuff, but living in
Yeah.
COVID time, he was kind of at home. So I think a lot of the social development he's kind of catching up on social cues and stuff. So
Okay.
he was with us a lot, right? It was kind of stay at home, hunker down. I mean, we had circle time over iPad, but I mean, it doesn't replace kind of the human touch kind of thing. I mean, and daycare too, right? They were closed or very limited. So, and now he's in daycare and it's like night and day, right? And so definitely I think he's catching up, but that's the benefit of kids is they learn so fast. So I'm not too concerned.
Okay.
I mean, his speech was delayed, I think, because again, me and Haley, like we don't know how to talk to our son, right? We would just we're working with a speech therapist, like we would just kind of blab at him a lot, and expecting him to pick up, but we didn't know we had to like slow down and repeat words like 10 times. At least I didn't like that. Like I thought I was dumb for repeating things 10 times, but then you read books and you talk to early educators, it's like that's what's required for him to pick up the words, it's repetition. And so I'm so thankful for, the early learning educators at the daycare centers and stuff, because, they have to repeat themselves probably multiple times and be really patient and stuff. And because of that, like my son now, his vocabulary is developing at light speed, right? Like when he
Wow.
was with us, we were probably like being critical and be like, how come you're not talking yet, right? Giving him all that pressure. But now in a group setting with peers and stuff like that, we just see him so different. We went from 2 days daycare to 4 days to now five. And it's been such a relief for us in terms of we can focus on our business and on our relationship. And then it's so good for him because he's making new friends, he's learning new things. There's a professional, right, there to watch and help him develop. And we're as parents, we think we're professionals in our kids' development, but I tend to disagree. Like no, like we don't know how to educate to our kid as much as someone that went to school and got a certification. I think best to leave it to the experts. Not saying to not spend time with your kids, but I'm just saying a bulk of the time. That's why they're licensed. That's why they went through the education. That's why you'll see someone, like Shervin, right? Like she's licensed as a counselor, right? You see a financial planner like myself for money management because, I got my certification. And I always believe in hiring like professionals. And there's a reason why they have a designation behind their name. It's because they spent those hours, right? I don't remember what the book was, but 10,000 hours is what you need to be an expert in any field. So usually when you have a designation, you some way, shape, or form has spent 10,000 hours in that field, and that's why you can be considered an expert.
I appreciate you validating that, and it's so true. Sometimes I think I will for the unforeseeable future have imposter syndrome about, oh, am I certified for this? Am I good enough for this? Oh my gosh, are people really getting any support from talking to me in therapy? And it's a good reminder that we went through a lot of training, we went through a lot of supervision and constantly learning and developing to get to where we are as therapists, at least. And of course, you're always going to have moments where you don't mesh or gel with a therapist, or you feel like they don't understand you. And that's normal because not everyone will get it or click with you. That's all part of building relationships with your therapist. But outside of the therapy world, it's so true where we don't know everything, and it's okay to admit that. I think it's very strong and brave to be able to admit that we don't know something, but it doesn't make you a bad parent, Kennel. In fact, I think recognizing your weaknesses or where you might be lacking is a source of strength. So you're able to provide Cohen with better options so he's able to grow in a way that's more appropriate for him because you might not have those skills. But of course, a lot easier said than done. I know it takes things like money and time and effort. And the first step is building on that self-awareness piece. And I think you've highlighted a lot of amazing points here today. Are there some things you wish you knew that you'd like to share with prospective or current parents? Like, new parents, these are the things you should know or think about, or even current parents.
Absolutely. I think I have five things I would
Okay.
share. So first one is similar to your line, asking for support. I think as a new dad, it was very hard for me to reach out and ask another father for support. Like the woman, they have their mom's group and they support each other, and it seems like it's natural for them, right? For us dads, we don't. And I think there's something called a man pride blocking you. At least that's what I call it. And I fortunately I got over it eventually, that ego things that, oh, I don't need help, I'm macho man, I can figure this out myself. When I asked a few fathers for support, they actually quickly came to my aid. It was really amazing to see when you just ask how much support you get. And so my previous counselor was a young dad, and he gave me a lot of tips during counseling and how he raised his kid and all that. And another dad who has two kids and runs a successful business, he shared with me how to, how he had to reparent himself to be better for his kids. And again, you know, being really vulnerable, being very open. I think as men, you know, it's very hard to do that. And through these two kind of great examples of fathers, I've learned to kind of open myself up. And that's why you see me here today, just being vulnerable, because I think that's the first step asking for support, is like just being, hey, it's okay. Like, you know, these struggles are normal. It's fine. It's, you know, like you mentioned, we don't have everything figured out, and it's completely okay. Normalizing, you know, that it's okay to not be okay. I think the second point would be like hand-me-downs, to save you money, like use items. The baby grows up really quickly, and so don't get sucked into the marketing, buying everything new, right? Like, especially new baby, you want the best for them, right? I don't blame any parent for that thought. But as parents, new parents, we save so much money by just asking around, going on Facebook Marketplace for these, you know, quote unquote used items. But they turned out really new, because when we talked to kind of the seller, they're like, yeah, we never had a chance to wear these. Our baby grew up so quick, and you actually can find new items, you know, quoted as used, just because it was, you know, they bought it, but it was unopened, and you can get brand new, you know, on Facebook Marketplace and all those sort of things. So, you know, car seat and all those kind of safety items aside, like those ones, yeah, buy brand new, because you don't know, and you know what, don't save money there. Like, go and buy a brand new car seat, stroller. Those things are money well spent. But clothes or you know, anything that's like, you know, don't have to worry about hygiene, you know, like bottles, I would buy brand new and stuff, nipples and all that. But anything that, you know, you can wash and stuff like that, just get it quote unquote used, and you might get new ones, right? And ask around. Like, there's a lot of like mom support groups, and my wife did that, and she, you know, got a lot of support from there as well. So don't, you know, back to that first point, right? The third thing is, I think your marriage will be challenged. Find a counselor if you need. Nothing wrong with that. And again, normalizing the finding the help, and especially counseling and psychologists. I grew up in a culture where, you know, if you were mentally ill, it was shamed. It was not okay to go see a counselor. And, you know, it was a journey for myself to even go to counseling myself. Again, my pastor was very supportive, and he talked to my parents that, hey, it's okay to go see a counselor, and then they okayed it, right? Because they thought, oh my goodness, what's wrong with my kid? Why is he going to see a counselor? Did I do something bad? Like, and then they start shaming themselves and think they're not good parents. And you know, my pastor normalized the whole process. It's like, hey, it's a growing process. It's completely okay. You know, my wife wanted to divorce me because she couldn't stand me anymore. And her last offer was, you know, we go to couple counseling, and if it doesn't work, well, that's it, right? I was on the verge of being a statistic, right? When things opened up, right, there was a statistic, I think, what, 1 in 4 families, like, or couples divorced after things opened up. I was like, I don't want to be a statistic. And I mean, I had a background in counseling. I knew how that helped. And I actually reached out to her to tell her, hey, let's go for couple counseling, but she couldn't find the right therapist. And then she did, right? She found this psychologist, and I noticed change in her. And then she was like, hey, you want to do couple counseling with this psychologist? I know it's quote unquote my psychologist. And I'm like, hey, if you think it's good, doesn't matter to me, let's try it, right? And we're still seeing her on a you know, monthly basis. And it's just worked miracles for our marriage. And it's, you know, we're still together because of it. And now we're reparenting ourselves to better ourselves for each other, our relationship and our son. Know that it's okay that the marriage is challenged, and just go get help, right? Don't go for a divorce, right? Like, try not to, right? At least, like, do everything you can. And of course, if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work, but at least give yourself that chance to work on it. The fourth thing is, don't forget to go on dates with your significant other. I think a lot of times we're so focused on our son or your child, you forget about each other, right? You forget about why you love each other, and you know, all those fun things you used to do, right? Like, we went traveling around Europe, and you know, we have photo albums of our wedding, and you know, we'll pick that up from time to time, just to remind ourselves. It's like, yeah, we love each other, right? We're not our enemies, right? We're a team. We're doing this together. But we get so busy, right? We make excuses. Oh, like, I'm so tired tonight. Like, I got to, you know, take care of Koa, and or oh, I don't want to do this, and you know, find help, right? Like, grandparents love to, you know, take your kids out for some time, right? And so schedule them, right? I think a lot of times is you gotta book it, right? You gotta own it. You gotta set that boundary. So, you know, me and my wife, like, Friday nights, we set a time and say, hey, you know, 8 o'clock, we're gonna do something, right? Whether it be just watch a, you know, movie, you know, go cooking class, go for a nice dinner or lunch, just do something where it's, you know, the two of you. I know, you know, it's hard, right? Believe me, it's hard, but you know, you gotta schedule. I mean, I'm still working on it right now. I got turned down this afternoon. I asked her out to go for lunch, and she was like, "I got all these things to do." And I'm like, "Oh man!" Like, so you know, but it's fun, right? It's like think back to like when you were dating, right? Like you didn't like this person wasn't like you wasn't like at least I mean I'm speaking from the guy side. It's like you know you're chasing that girl, right? And it's like you know, as you get married, you forget, you take them for granted, right? My wife will say, "Why do you take me for granted?" Oh, because I have a ring on my finger, and we do, right? And it was a good reflection on my part. I'm like, oh yeah, I did take her for granted. And so now I ask her, I'm like, hey, you know, like how do I not take you for granted, right? Like how do I impress you again, right? How do I chase you again and pursue you? And I think that's healthy, right? It's that's the fun part of the relationship. And yeah, why does it have to die when it's, you know, in marriage? You know, go and rekindle that flame and have fun with it, right? And so that would help, you know, setting the dates. And finally, I think my last point will be your child grows up really fast. So enjoy every moment of it because it could be the very last, right? Be in the present, right? My son now is big. He's like a little human. He has, you know, adorable eyes like me. But I miss those times where I cuddle him on my chest or hold him on one hand. You know, I'll do lifts with him. And he was just like this tiny bundle of joy, right? And now he's just like this human, like it's heavy, right? Lifting him, he's probably like 30 plus pounds. And I every moment I get, I put him on my shoulders because I'm like, Frick, he's probably gonna be like old, and or one day he's gonna be like, no, Dad, I don't want you lifting me up, right? And so every moment I tell him, I'm like, up, up. He's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay. I put him on my shoulders. I do everything I can. Like every moment I get, like he's bath, like bath time right now. Like I enjoy it. I go, right? He's calling me to go bath time, and I'm like, hey. Who knows? One day he clicks and is like, okay, I want to shower my own dad. Like, you know, get out. I don't want you washing me shower. But until he gets that awareness, like I'm gonna enjoy every single moment of it because they grow up, right? He, you know, I was waiting for him to walk, and he walks, and then you know he was crawling, and then now he's running, right? Like now I have to run to keep up with him, and it's like they just grow up so fast. So every moment, right? You like just cherish it, right? Like my clients tell me all the time, he's like, yeah, like I would spend more time with my kid if I were to do things over again as a parent. Like I would treasure every moment. And I didn't understand that until and COVID, like thanks to COVID, I worked from home. And mind you, like that was the blessing in disguise. Like I got to stay home and watch my kid grow up and watch how hard it was to raise a kid if my, you know, my wife what like raising Cohen up. And I'm like, man, for all those mothers out there that have to raise their kids like on their own, like kudos to you. Like I have mad respect for you because it's tough. And for the husbands, right? Like, yeah, you go out and work and it's hard for you too, but hey, like don't forget about your wives that, you know, especially if they stay at home and if you work on the side too. Oh my goodness. You guys amaze me, right? Like, I think it was International Women's Day yesterday. Like you guys just are so underappreciated. I think you guys are so, not guys, girls, like ladies, wonderful, right? You guys, you ladies are just so amazing creatures. It's, you know, to be able to do it. Like I can't do it, right? Like and that's why I try to find every, like, you know, we talk about gender equality and all that other sort of stuff. It's like, yeah, like, you know, parenting is not just one parent. It should be equal parenting, right? Co-parenting. And I always ask myself, like, what can I do more? What can I do to support? Because it doesn't take one to raise a child. It takes a village, right? But you know, in a parenting setting, it takes two, right? It's not just mom all the time, right? It's not just dad all the time. It's both. So enjoy every moment of it. They grow up fast. And try to help out, right? Dads, I'm calling you out because I'm a dad, right? Like, don't sit back and you know, drink beer and watch TV, watch sports. Go play with your kid, right? Go and ask your wife how to do it, right? I kept asking my wife. I'm like, "What do you want me to do? I don't know. Tell me what to do, right? Tell me how to help, and just work with it, right? Work with it."
Thanks for sharing all the five tips just now, Kendall. I really admire your ability to capture the essence of mindfulness and being in that moment with your son, with yourself, with your wife, with your partner, whoever it might be, and also to show appreciation and gratitude, whether you're a single dad, you're a single mom, a working dad, working mom, whatever you identify as. I think we all have a role to play in our children's lives or in our partner's lives or even in our own lives with our relationships with ourselves and others. And regardless of how you identify with it, really is about being in that moment and listening to what's needed instead of being in that, you know, got to think about the future mindset all the time, because when you're so busy thinking about the future, as cheesy and corny as it sounds, you're missing what's right in front of you. And when that moment is gone, sometimes it doesn't come back and you won't see it again. I just wanted to make a note about the couples therapy part. I've had the opportunity to see some couples as part of my practicum in the last few months. And I guess for anyone who's interested or curious, it's really a way for couples or people in relationships, it could be with a parent or a child or between partners, a way to just communicate in a way that's clear. So if you're having a hard time talking to one another, or you have a lot of thoughts in your head that you can't really express accurately and it just comes out the wrong way, that's where the therapist or the clinician comes into play. We're here to help you untangle some of those thoughts and for you to express them in a way that makes sense for the both of you, and really coming together to make it a team effort instead of pining you against each other or being like, who he says, she said. It's not about that. It's about working as a team and teaching couples or people in relationships how to be a team. So that's a little bit about that. But Kendall, is there anything else you'd like to plug or share with listeners? Where can they find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Instagram. I have Young Dad Finance. Is the handle. So for those dads, my passion is in mental health and family life and finance. So you can find some tips and just follow my journey there. So my company is called Teleos Wealth. That's the holistic planning that I do for clients. So that's also a handle for Instagram. I have a YouTube channel. You can just look up my name, Kennel Dew. You know, there's probably only one Kennel in the world, I think. Glad to meet another one. But you can just search my name. And if you need wealth coaching, need help structuring your finances as new parents, give me a shout. I'll do free consultations to see how I can help. I do have my certified financial planning designation. And, there's something called like the financial therapist designation that I'm working on. That's kind of, how to kind of rebuild that relationship with money. So those are different ways to connect. Sherwin will have a link somewhere or we'll figure it out. But yeah, just search my name. I think you'll find me on the web.
I'll definitely put links in the description where people can find you. And thank you so much for being here today, Kennel.
Thank you, Sherwin.
To support my podcast and help reach others, please follow and share it with anyone who is looking to learn a bit more about mental health. For any listeners who are visual learners or would like some more resources, I invite you to read my blog post on sherwin.ca, follow my Twitter at HelloSherwin, and my Instagram at TherapyWithSherwin for any updates. Take care.